brought a friend today. I thought I, you know, the ride was long. Actually, he was given to me by someone from this very center, Joy Knopf. Any of you remember Joy Knopf? She made these bears, and she gave it to me at the time I was music director here. And one week I played the song Alfie. And I don't know if it was her favorite song or not, but she loved it, and so she made him, and she named him Alfie. You can see the tattoo in his foot. It says Alfie. So I brought him along because he's very intelligent. You probably can tell, you know, the glasses. He looks a little like a professor, you know, or a scientist. So I thought we could ask him, Alfie, what's it all about? Why are we here? How did we get here? Where do we go from here? Is there something beyond all of this? Well, he'll tell us a little bit about that later. He can just be comfortable there, okay? Because you probably know that philosophers have dealt with these questions for thousands of years, those very questions that I just asked. And what they've come up with, they've discerned, they've reasoned that there has something. Did I just go off? Okay. There had to be something, a first cause, something that got it all started. The universe didn't just happen. Something had to cause it. And so this thing that caused it had to be unconditioned or uncaused. It didn't get caused, because science says that for every effect there's a cause. So if the cause were cause, then it wouldn't be the first cause. Something else would be the cause, and you could drive yourself crazy thinking about that. I remember in first grade in school being told, you know, that God never began, and that really tortured my little mind, like doing exactly what we might be doing right now. It's hard to comprehend that idea of something that just is, but it is. And even though it may be hard to comprehend, logic tells you that. That if something was caused, something else caused it, and you just go crazy going back and back and back. So they discerned and they reasoned that this cause, this original something, had to be self-existent. And then they reasoned that it had to be intelligent, that there was a mind, order in the universe, in nature. I mean, we can predict the time that the sun will rise and set every day from here till who knows minute that it will rise. Intelligence in our bodies. Am I affecting the way this is? The intelligence within our bodies. Right now, your body knows what to do with whatever you ate for breakfast. It knows exactly what to do, how to change it into the very substance of your body. We looked at our breath in the meditation. You're not thinking about your breath right now until I just mentioned it, probably. There you were standing and singing. There you were walking around. Whatever it is, your body just knows to do that. Your heart is beating and pumping at a rate that's appropriate for your sitting here quietly. If you're to go out later in the cold, in the wind, and maybe even run toward your car, it'll beat faster to accommodate that. There's an intelligence within your body to do that. So these great minds reasoned that this something had to be intelligent. Then they reasoned that it had to be good, meaning benign, affirmative, constructive, not destructive, because if it were negative or destructive, then it would be destroying everything and destroying itself, and then there'd be nothing. So it had to be good or positive. And then they discerned that it needed to be infinite or omnipresent. There would be nowhere where it leaves off. Because here we go again. If there's somewhere where it leaves off, then there's something else. And then we're back to that square one again. Or even if you said, well, it would leave off and then there's nothing. Well, then if there's nothing, then it didn't leave off. So it had to be everywhere. It had to be infinite without any limitation or any boundaries or any borders or anything. And so therefore, it's what we call spirit, not matter. Matter takes form. It's here and not there. It's now and not before or later. Matter begins and ends. No matter how long it lasts, it has a beginning and an end. It eventually deteriorates and then becomes something else. But it has a beginning and end. But the nature of spirit is not that. It's not bound by time or in space at all. It's not matter. Now, it's not the opposite, but it's not material or matter. And our friend Thomas Troward, and if you've been around for a while, have heard of him. He influenced, his writings influenced Ernest Holmes a great deal. He said, "We cannot account for the things we can see unless we assume the existence of other things we cannot see." Now, science, at least those who don't believe in God, those who deny the existence of God, they do that because they can't see God. They can't analyze God. They can't explain God, and so they say it isn't. There isn't anything. And yet, science says energy is neither created nor destroyed. It just is. And Einstein said everything's energy. It's another word for God, really. So you know, it's saying what they're saying isn't really true. So we have all kinds of names for God or words that we use for God. One of them is Howard. You've heard that? You know, Johnny, who comes home from Sunday school, and his mother says, "So how was Sunday school?" And he says, "It was good." He says, "Well, what did you learn? Did you learn about God?" He says, "Yeah, we learned about God. We learned God's name. It's Howard." And she says, "They told you that God's name is Howard?" He says, "Yes. We said the Lord's Prayer. Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." So we've come up with all kinds of names and words for God. And we have a slide. Is Edie here? We have a slide with those names. Yay, there they are. So they are Atman, Brahman, Allah, Bahu'llah, the Christ, the Buddha nature, Wakantanka, creator, Jehovah, Elohim, Yahweh, Father, Source, Great Spirit, the Infinite, Mind, Divine Mind, Universal Intelligence, Infinite Presence, the Whole, the Beloved, Love, First Cause, Life, Beingness, I Am, the Isness, the Thing Itself. That's Ernest Holmes, it's how profound, the Thing Itself. And yet it is profound, because it goes beyond that idea of a being, a he, or sorry ladies, a she, you know, just something that is. And if we sat here for another hour, we could probably come up with a whole bunch of other names, maybe names that you use yourself, to express this something that just is. And then we have, in our teaching, if you've been around for a while, you know that we talk about the qualities of God, or the aspects of spirit. And so we have another list, and there they are. They are life, light, love, peace, power, beauty, joy. They all come from Troward. And we have harmony, order, abundance, supply, ease, freedom, energy, wholeness, strength, support, wisdom, guidance, understanding, compassion. And again, there are so many more. And these are just these aspects, these qualities of God. We can observe them, we can't analyze and figure them out, but we just observe them. And God, the source, whatever name you want to give it, is all of these qualities. That's exactly what God is. And you might notice they're all capitalized, and that wasn't just for the looks of the slide. That actually comes from Plato. He talked about beauty and truth and love as reality. This is what reality is. And he used that way of expressing them with a capital letter. Interesting. So God is the source of your being. You didn't bring yourself into being. We said that in the meditation. Emerson, another influence on Holmes, Ralph Waldo Emerson, says it more poetically in this essay on the Oversoul. He says, "Man is a stream whose source is hidden. Always our being is descending into us from we know not whence." Here I am, you know. How did I get here? I don't know. I just found myself here. So you didn't bring yourself into being. And you also, neither did you give yourself the ability to think. The very fact that we can talk about these things, think about these things, ponder these, have questions and discussions and all of that, it's evidence that we're part of a greater mind. Do you ever stop and think about that? How does my, you know, here I am thinking, here I am figuring these things out, here I'm questioning, coming up with new ideas. How can I do that? I often wonder about Stephen Hawking, that brilliant, brilliant mind, that physicist. I wonder if he ever wonders, how can he reason and figure out and conceive of new ideas and all of that? Apparently not. He doesn't seem to think there's anything beyond. Wow. So yes, God's the source of your being, but God's also the substance of your being, the stuff that you're made of. Those qualities, they're the stuff that you're made of. Again, Troward, we can't account for the things that we do see unless we say that there's something beyond what we don't see, beyond what we see, something that we don't see. And that's what we're talking about. Those qualities. Ernest Holmes said, we don't see beauty. And the first time I read that, I thought, if anything, we see beauty. He said, we see the beautiful. We see that which is beautiful. But beauty is that spiritual, invisible quality that expresses as the beautiful. Isn't that interesting? So we are that beautiful. We are that expression of that something bigger, bigger than this self that we see ourselves to be. So God's the source of your being, and God's the substance, the stuff of your being. You and I, we're God's stuff. Now, it's important to realize that we are made of God. We're created out of God's stuff, but we're not the source. We can say we're God, but we're not the source. One of the Declaration of Principles, which I'm sure you've read, Ernest Holmes came up with them to put into concrete, you know, expression what we teach. One of the principles says, this one, meaning God, manifests itself in and through all creation, but is not, anybody know the rest of it? But is not absorbed by its creation. This one manifests itself in and through all creation, but is not absorbed by its creation. We can't use up God. The billions of people that there are, and animals and plants and stars and planets and all of that, none of it can ever use up this infinite source. At our center, we've reworded the principles, the Declaration of Principles, to make them a little more down to earth. No offense, Ernest, but to make them a little bit down to earth. So that principle that says, this one manifests itself in and through all creation, but is not absorbed by its creation, we've said, everything that exists is God, but God is more than everything that exists. So that's the same thing that we're saying. In other words, God is infinite. And again, let's listen to Emerson, same essay, The Oversoul, he says, when I watch that flowing river, which out of regions I see not, pours for a season its streams into me, I see that I am a pensioner, not a cause, but a surprised spectator of this ethereal water. Wow, how poetic is that? I don't know, but there's just something flowing through me, and I'm part of it. I just found myself here. Here I am. Wow. So, yes, we're God, but we're not the source. We're included in the source, and it's important to realize that, because if we think of ourselves as separate from this source or out on our own, you know, struggling, we don't get very far. And that's when we find things really hard. That's when things become a struggle, when we think of ourselves as not part of this one source. Master teacher Jesus was criticized for calling God his father. They said, you're making yourself equal with God. And so he responded, he said, the Son of God can do nothing of himself but what he sees the Father do. For whatever things he, the Father, does, these also the Son does likewise. Now it's important to know that when Jesus says the Son of God, he's not speaking about himself in third person. He's speaking about the Son of God. Everything is the offspring of this one. Everything is the Son of God. And he said, whatever God does, we can do. Sounds a little bit ambitious, doesn't it? When you think about all that God has done and does. Sounds a little ambitious. But what does God do? God creates. I mean, obviously, God creates. And how does God create? God creates by knowing something about itself. In the very first book of the Bible, in Genesis, it says, God said, let there be light, and there was light. Now, light symbolizes conscious awareness. And so the first thing, God is conscious of itself. Now, I'm saying first, not meaning that it happened in time. Again, we know it didn't. But the first thing is awareness and consciousness. And as God knows itself as this consciousness, we have the physical expression of it with light. God knows itself as life. We have the creatures in the sea and in the air and all of that. God said, let there be these creatures, and there was. There's this abundance of life showing up all over the place. And so we have to think of ourselves, conceive of ourselves as whatever it is we would like to see ourselves being in the world, and then it shows up. But that's another talk. And probably Dr. Maxine can talk to you next week about that, all about creation. What we're talking about today is, what is God? And what are we? And why is that important? Why does that even matter? What do you think Alfie has to say about that? What do you think he has to say about that? Oh, he says, here's the thing. And sometimes when somebody says that to you, you think something bad's coming, right? Here's the thing. He says, here's the thing. Whatever we think God is, or whatever we think about God, that's what we experience in our life. So if we think that God doesn't exist, then we will experience chaos, randomness, chance, unpredictability. You never know what's going to happen. Sure. If we think God is watching us, expecting us to be good, doing the right thing, obeying him, we'll probably feel guilty a lot of the time. And worse yet, we'll probably look around and expect things of other people, expect them to be measuring up, and then find fault with them when they don't measure up. If God's the judge, then we start playing judge as well. If we think that God is good and loving, but up there somewhere, out there, and how many times when we talk about God and we look up, it's kind of a natural thing, then we'll feel alone or afraid or isolated, especially when things are hard or tough. But if we think of God as life itself, our life and our mind, we'll not only feel secure, certainly makes us feel more secure about that, but we'll see ourselves as God expressing through us and creating through us. We'll see ourselves as that I am. He can take a little seat here for a minute. I can venture to say that probably most of us were not taught that growing up. That we're part of this awesome, infinite something. Emily was. She grew up with this. And look what she is, you know. So most of us weren't taught that. Most of us were taught, how dare you think such a thought? Why would you say that you're this beautiful expression of God, that you are what God is? How dare you? How arrogant, blasphemous. That's a sin of pride to say that. Am I right? Did you hear things like that? Just the opposite of what we're saying in here, in our teaching. Wow. But it's the truth. We're made of those qualities, those aspects of God. It's the stuff that we're made of. That life, that joy, that peace, that freedom, that abundance. And when we realize that, that's when life isn't quite so difficult. Because we realize that it's not up to us to make everything happen. We're part of something greater, bigger, grander. We're part of a universal wholeness. I love that word, wholeness. No pieces, no parts, nothing separate, complete, a wholeness. We're part of infinite life. We're part of all power, intelligence, much more than we can ever comprehend. And yet, closer than our very breath, we live and move and have our being in this awesome something. There's a great movie back in the 70s, The Verdict, with Paul Newman. I don't know if I see some nods. Paul Newman is a lawyer, but he's now an alcoholic. He hasn't won a case in years, and he's just really gone down the tubes. But he gets this case. He gets to prosecute this case of a woman who's now been reduced to a vegetative state through a mistake of a doctor, a very well-known, renowned, respected doctor in a very respected, renowned hospital. But he's prosecuting the case. But it's not going well at all because they're doing everything possible to preserve the good name of the doctor and the hospital. Even the judge is in on all that. So he's feeling so discouraged, and he's just sitting there with his head in his hands, and he's so discouraged. But his partner says, don't worry, I forget what Newman's name is in that. Don't worry, there will be other cases. And he says, there is no other case. This is the case. There is no other case. This is the case. And he says it over and over and over. There is no other life. This is the life. This awesome, grand, infinite, beautiful life. The thing itself. You're it. I'm it. That's what it's all about. And that's what this teaching is all about. Two very, very simple things. We teach spiritual mind treatment, which is just a way to think. Who knows the first two steps? Not a practitioner. Who knows the first two steps of treatment?
There's only God, basically.
There's only God. That's the first one. Who knows the second one?
I am.
I am. By the way, I brought this. Some of you may have gotten this a couple years back. Reverend Penny Masick, I think, was here. She's my mentor. I have this on my steering wheel of my car. Boy, does that help. So yes. it usually helps. So there is only this something, this isness. I love that word, isness. There's just this something. And because there's only this something, and there's no boundaries, no borders, it's just all there is everywhere, then I am part of it. And I am all those things that it is. That's really all that matters. Now, that was going to be the end, and it will be in a minute. But just last night, going to bed, I read this, and I thought, boy, does this fit. This is The Philosophy of Ernest Holmes. Holmes Papers, Volume 1. The heading here is The Rich Mentality. With what vastness of power we may ally ourselves. What mighty energy is his who hurled the stars into ordered space. What infinite wisdom in their stately workings. What exquisiteness of beauty in the creative mind that paints sunsets and adorns rainbows. What melody in his soul who teaches birds to sing. What depth of tenderness in him who gave the mother heart its love. This energy, wisdom, beauty, and love, dynamic and creative, belong to the one whose simple, seamless fabric of faith is the deep, abiding consciousness of the indwelling presence, and who dares to draw forth the God within him. Do you dare? Do you dare to see yourself as all of that and so much more? I hope you do, because it's the truth. And so it is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. We love having such a special means of connecting with you, and trust you have enjoyed this message. If you have benefited from and been uplifted by these ideas and would like to learn more about our spiritual community, please go to our website at cslphilly.com. And if you wish to express your gratitude, simply click on the donate button to experience the joy of conscious giving. Your generous support makes it possible to share these messages of inspiration with all the world. Please share this message with anyone you feel might benefit and encourage them to subscribe to our podcast by searching GPCSL on your favorite podcasting application. Again, thank you for joining me and the Greater Philadelphia Center for Spiritual Living Community as together we create a world that works for all.